Welcome to today's episode of Fire in the Belly. This is where we get to hear some pretty inspiring stories from some amazing people. You know, it's always an absolute pleasure to sit down, take time out, and have a warts and all conversation about their journey. I'm always intrigued by what it's taken for people to get to where they are today. And hopefully, in this interview, we get to hear some more about that. From this, my mission is to help people to find their own fire in their belly, and from that, to live the mightiest version of you. So without further ado, sit back, relax, and enjoy today's guest. Success is a process, not an event.
Hello, and welcome to Fire in the Belly. Today we have myself, Mighty Pete, and we are joined by the Jeff Olson. Good afternoon, good morning to you. It's great to have you on the show. Thank you for coming on.
Oh, it's good to be with you, Pete. And yeah, it's early morning here, but somehow we're all connected anyway, so it works well.
Well, that's it. I mean, it doesn't matter. The sun's always shining. It just depends which way you're looking, right? That's the difference.
That's right.
So, Jeff, give us a bit of background. Who are you? What do you do? And where are you from?
Oh, gosh. I grew up here in the Rocky Mountains of Utah. And I'm an author. I'm a speaker. I'm a creative director. I have many healing modalities, including being a Munaki spirit keeper shaman. So anyway, there's a lot of different things, but the bottom line is I'm a man, and I'm simply here with my experience to be my contribution, however I can, to society for the for the awakening of our hearts and the oneness of us all.
Wow, are you clear on your purpose in life? Have you got to that stage?
I am, actually, and in fact, I have an affirmation that I often say, and this was born of much of the experience. But what I say is that I am a powerful, loving manifestation of the divine creator. And by being a powerful, loving manifestation of the divine creator, I bring forth truth, clarity, and oneness, creating a world of passion, abundance, and peace. And I always end by saying, and so it is, for it is so. And that's my mantra. That's how I live.
How did that come about, Jeff? I mean, that's a beautiful, I love that sort of holistic view of it all. I mean, is that just something that's evolved through time for you, or?
It has, and yet there's very pinnacle things that happened. I mean, number one, I had a profound near-death or out-of-body experience, and this has been 24 years ago. So it isn't just like I woke up one morning and it's like, oh, here's what my mantra is. But in that near-death experience, it was the cause of that was a horrific automobile accident. The whole family was in the car, myself, my wife, our two young boys. And as a result of that, It was horrific. I mean, both my legs were crushed. My left leg was amputated above the knee. My back was broken. My right arm was nearly pulled off. The rib cage was damaged. My lungs collapsed. And then the seatbelt cut through and ruptured all my intestines. So I was basically a goner. The worst part of it is my wife and youngest son were killed instantly in the accident. And, you know, we can discuss that further maybe, but without going into a bunch of detail, wow, that was a horrific thing. Half the family's gone. I'm, you know, incapacitated. But at that time I left my body. You know, I've learned it's called a near-death experience, but I left my body. I had a visit into the other realm. I was sent back. Ironically, by my wife, who I knew was deceased at the scene, but in this realm, she was alive and well, and we had the conversation that I was to come back. My seven-year-old son, who also survived the accident with me, he was banged up a little, but he basically walked away from the accident physically, but emotionally. He thought he had lost the whole family, and this was the conversation. Hey, you've got to go back. You can't come. You've got to go raise our son. And there's a whole unfolding of what took place and even the years aftermath of miracles and struggles and all that comes with life. But the book is called Knowing by Jeffrey Olson. It's available on Amazon. But that was the beginning. That was like, wow, it wasn't what I thought. I had these peaks into these other realms. And what I believed of God, if you will, that there was judgment and I was failing the test of life, was completely turned inside out and upside down to, wow, life was no longer a test. It was an absolute gift. And my encounter with the divine was so filled with unconditional love. There was no judgment. There was no comparison. It was absolute love. And so in coming back, it was profound. That, in fact, I was asked the question in that experience, to what degree have you learned to love? Which is a loaded question if you want to contemplate that. But that's where this phrase, you know, gosh, I'm a divine manifestation of the Creator. But I did a lot of soul searching. I dove into religion, my own Christian faith, my own, you know, I looked into Buddhism and Hinduism and Islam and all kinds of ancient modalities. I looked into healing modalities, you know, everything from Reiki to matrix energetics and reconnective healing. And suddenly I was just open to this quest for truth. My creation statement, I call it, my contract. I mean, the reason I'm here, that mantra I shared, came about through some powerful training I did. Much later in life, it was my oldest son who had survived the accident with me that he was also, you know, searching and a seeker. And it was called Impact Trainings here in Bluffdale, Utah. But that was where I really solidified the contract and got in touch with who I am and what I'm doing and being. And it was from that space that I wrote the book Knowing, and that I began to lean into that contract, lean into that higher purpose, if you will.
The true you, who you are and who you are today, are they one and the same, or is there still a gap? Will there always be a gap between your true self and your sort of daily self, if you like?
That's a great question, Pete. I mean, I am who I am. I mean, we all are, right? I mean, that is a truth. But there are days that I think, wow, I'm not living on purpose. There are days when, you know, in this duality, in this humanity, that I may not feel so connected to the divine. You know, I might be angry at something at work or in my head and self-conscious about life and what goes on. But I think the good news for me is that when that happens, at least now I can look at it and see it. And I'm aware. It's like, well, you know what? I'm in my head, or I'm not necessarily, you know, on purpose. And I can make those appropriate adjustments that bring me back into alignment.
A couple of questions. Well, first of all, what does on purpose mean or feel or look like for you?
Well, you ask good questions. And that's a very personal question. People think, I mean, I see all this. It's almost become trendy now. You know, well, what's your purpose? And are you living your life's purpose? It's a very deep and personal thing. And for me to live on purpose, to have purpose in my life, often comes down to the little things. You know, given my injuries, and I was in the hospital for 6 months, I had 18 surgeries putting me back together. I was in a wheelchair. I had a colostomy bag. I had to learn how to walk again. I had to get my digestive tract all reconnected. And, you know, there's all these things, and people have said to me, oh, you must have been spared for some great cause, for some, you know. And I often chuckle to myself and think, yeah, to see one more sunset or to play catch with my son. I think sometimes for me, we get misaligned in thinking that our purpose is some great grand thing, where for me, the greatest purpose is in the everyday, ordinary things of life. You know, it's those little things that become the big things. And the most profound thing I might do in a day is the smile to a stranger as we pass on the street, simply sharing some love or some light in a situation that I may know nothing about, but for them that may make all the difference.
Isn't it phenomenal how that time? And well, first of all, I'm curious. I mean, you talked about an NDE, the near-death experience, and an out-of-body experience, and you sort of referred to them slightly different. Is there a difference, or what way do you see them?
Let me articulate that a little bit. I'll go into a little bit of detail, and it's interesting to know that two of the most profound things that happened were actually at the scene of the accident. And I don't talk about this to be morbid or graphic, but the accident itself, it was a single car rollover at high speeds. I was going 75 miles per hour. And I blacked out for most of the accident. But when the car came to a stop, I was completely conscious. And the first thing I heard was my 7-year-old, my oldest son who survived the accident with me, he was crying. I mean, he was a child, 7 years old. He's crying hysterically in the back seat. And my first thought was, I've got to get to him. I've got to get to my boy. And that's when I realized that I could not move. I was pinned either to the seat or the floorboard. I couldn't tell. There was the rancid smell of gasoline, petroleum, all the broken glass. I was unaware of my injuries at that time. But that's when I also became aware that no one else was crying. That's when I became acutely aware that half the family had passed. And that was the darkest hell a man could be in. And yet it was in that darkest space that I felt light come. It literally felt as if light came and surrounded me and was comforting me in this horrible, horrible circumstance. And it felt as if I was rising above the scene of the accident. And suddenly I could breathe. There was no pain. And my thought was, how can I possibly be okay? And it was in that light, if you will, it almost felt like a holding bubble, like a bubble of light that my wife, who I knew was deceased at the scene, came and she was there with me. And we communicated in such a profound way. And I already mentioned, we decided that I would come back. And she was saying, you've got to go back. You can't stay. You've got to go back. And we made a choice. And I suppose that would be an out-of-body experience. But the interesting thing in making that choice is I said the most profound goodbye I'll ever say. And then there I was suddenly, immediately, like wandering through a hospital. And this was profound because I was encountering the doctors, the nurses, the patients, the families of the patients. I mean, I was encountering everything in a busy level one trauma center. But I was encountering it in such a way that I was seeing people as I'd never seen them before. Now, here I was moving about the hospital. So basically my soul. And I was feeling everyone in such a oneness. I call it, there was such a connectedness. There was such love. And even, you know, even my Christian upbringing, I had a biblical verse come to mind, which was, in as much as you've done it unto the least of one of these, you've done it unto me, which I used to believe Jesus had said. It was a nice verse about being nice, right? But I was experiencing the fact that they were me, that I was them, and they were me. And there was such a connection and such a oneness. And I thought, wow, maybe what Jesus was saying is I am the beggar on the street. I am the man in prison. I am the stranger. And there was this profound connection until I came upon a body or a man I didn't feel anything from, which was odd given the profound connection I was experiencing. And I stepped closer to look to realize, wow, that's me. Now it wasn't me. That was my body. I was having this profound connected experience, but there was my body so battered, so, gosh, it was a mess. And I knew I was to get back in. I suppose that would be an out-of-body experience, because I seemed to be held in this light, and then I seemed to be very much in this realm, but outside of my body. Well, sure enough, you know, I made the choice to get back in the body, but then, and I didn't have to figure out how. It was the intention. We have no idea how powerful our thoughts are. You know, it's like I'm going back in, but then back to the pain, the grief, the regret, I mean, the guilt, you know, I was driving the car. I mean, all of that was so heavy. And as I spent time in the hospital, as I say, almost 6 months and many surgeries, and the door never seemed to shut all the way, I had this sense of the doctors, the nurses, my family. But the most profound thing may have happened, which I'm calling a near-death experience, at the end of my hospital stay. Now, it's probably worth mentioning the two big experiences were at the scene of the accident, and then at the end of my hospital stay, when I was off of the narcotics, you know, I wasn't on morphine or any heavy narcotics like that. But this time, and it was interesting, I mean, I was recovering. I was going to get, you know, I was going to get well. I was going to come home. But at this point, I was actually able to lay on my side. They had finally stabilized all the abdominal ruptures so I could sleep on my side. And I had laid so long on the back of my head that I'd rubbed all the hair off the back of my head. I'd rubbed the hair off. I was bald on the back of my head. And my brothers were giving me a bad time about that. And gosh, brothers, you know, I think they practically lost their jobs, you know, to sit with me in the hospital, to be with me, to support me. And I was grieving miserably, even with all the profound things that had happened. But on this particular night, as I rolled on my side, and I was so grateful that I could finally, I naturally sleep on my side, but I was still deep in grief, that light came. That light came just like at the scene of the accident. This light came and began to comfort me and surround me. And it felt as if I was rising above the hospital bed, you know, again, that rise. But this time, and this is why I classify it perhaps a near-death experience, the light went away. The light dispensed. And I was in the most incredible place. You know, people say heaven or the spirit world or the other side. There's only one word that comes close to what I experienced, and I was home. I was home. It was so welcoming. It was so beautiful. It was so familiar. In fact, I began to run. Now, I, you know, with all the injuries, I don't run in this realm, but in that realm, I was running. And I can't emphasize how physical and sensory the experience was. I could feel the energy of the ground beneath my feet. You know, I could feel the intelligence in my toes and in my calves and in my thighs. It was a profound physical experience, and yet I knew I was out of the body because there I had two legs and two healthy feet, and you know, all the injuries were non-existent. And as I ran about, I was running, just giddy, just I'm home, and the pain was gone, and the guilt seemed to be gone, and yet as I did that, I got the message I wasn't there to stay. And at that same time, there was this corridor off to my left, and I knew intuitively I'm to go that way. And I did. I began running down the corridor. And the beautiful thing is, as I did, at the end of the corridor, I saw a crib. Now, Griffin, my little boy who was killed in the accident, he was still sleeping in a crib. He was just a toddler at the time of the accident. He was 14 months old. And so this was very familiar, and I raced to the crib. And sure enough, there he was. There was my little boy, and he was sleeping peacefully in that crib. And I picked him up. And I don't know if you've ever picked up a sleeping child, but there's a weight and a heat to, I mean, it was so physical. I held him up to my body. I held him tight, and I could feel him physically, solidly against me. And I was marveling, how can this be? But it was so physical. And I even leaned over and I smelled his hair. You know, these things that you do in this realm, I mean, the smell of the hair of a loved one. And I kissed him and I began to weep. I thought, I'm holding my little boy. And I classified this a near-death experience because of this physical aspect. Like I was in a different place. I was experiencing in a very sensory way everything about it. And yet at this point, as I held my son and I was weeping, I felt an intense presence behind me. Something so big, so powerful, so cosmic, so wise. And I began to be fearful because I thought, well, that's God, you know, and the guilt began to come up. I thought, wow, my little boy's here because I crashed the car. You know, his life was cut short because I lost control, and you know, the guilt and this presence is coming closer and closer, and I'm becoming more and more fearful of the judgment, you know, that may be coming. And yet, as the presence came so close, and this almost felt physical too, I had the thought. My thought was, I hope there's some way I can be forgiven. And with that thought, and this almost felt physical too, these divine arms wrapped around and held me and my son. I mean, it was this embrace of absolute unconditional love. And the lid just came off. There was this download of peace or truth or clarity. Some of these things I've used in this statement I created. And I did. I saw my life, you know. It unfolded before my eyes, as they say. And I was saying, oh, no, that was a mistake. I didn't mean to do that. And the communication was, there are no mistakes. What did you learn from it? What was the lesson? What was, and you know, I had things I thought, well, I knew that was wrong and I did it anyway. And the beautiful thing is this divine being, God, if you will, that held me, said, that's your judgment of it, not ours. We absolutely love you. You are as beloved. You are as cherished to us as the child you hold in your own arms. And that's what was so multiplicity about it. Here I was holding my son. To me, he was perfect. He was divine. He was beloved. He was, and yet what was communicated to me is, yes, that's how we feel about you. And more so, it was a very personal and profound experience, but I knew that it rippled out to every one of us, that there was so much love, there was so much unconditional love, that it just showered over me. And I was also given another tutorial on choice. I was told I could be mad at God the rest of my life because this happened, and I could blame, you know, the universe for half the family being gone and for my, you know, state of being. And that was a choice. I also was told I could blame myself. I could beat myself up for the rest of my life in guilt because I was driving the car. But I was given a third choice, and it was a profound choice. It was, you can exercise your will. And now here I am in the arms of God, and I've come up in this, you know, this conservative Christian upbringing. And I said, well, I thought it was your will be done. And this divine being communicated, my will is your will. That's how much we love you. My will has always been that you have free will, that you can choose. And the third choice was I could give my son. I could give my son back. I could trust and let go and hand him over. And my wife too, if I chose, and exercise my will, but, you know, release them. And in all that love and peace, that's what I was able to do. I was able to kiss my little boy and hand him over. And then I was back in the hospital bed to the amputation and the wheelchair and all that goes with it. But I classify that a near-death experience because of the physical encounters that took place that were not in this realm. They were in a realm different than that, and it changed me. Didn't fix it all. You know, I don't want anyone to think that, oh, I had this accident and I had profound experiences and then I was fine. No, I had the accident. I had incredible, profound experiences. And then I grieved like anyone else would grieve. And it took years for me to ever ground myself and get, you know, get clear. I processed it for some time. And miracles happened. I mean, miracles happened. I was able to get home and take care of my surviving son. And I got back to work and I was eventually fitted with a prosthetic limb and I learned to walk again. And eventually the colostomy bag was taken down. And I have healed in amazing ways. It doesn't mean I still struggle with pain and some of the injuries and the things that went on. But also I, and it's all in knowing. I mean, get knowing on Amazon and you'll get all the ins and outs of the whole story, but amazing things happened. I eventually fell in love again, which was a gift. And, Tanya, my current wife, came into our lives and she assisted to put the pieces back together and to be a mother to Spencer and a wife to me. And we adopted two boys and rebuilt a family. And yet in all of it, there was lessons. In all of it, there was lessons. And so I often don't concentrate on the near death experience. I concentrate on the life experience. Like what is life? And what about our day-to-day being based on what happened? But that's the long and short of it, really. And yet that door never seemed to shut. I still have dreams, of my son who was killed in the accident. And yet he doesn't come to me as a toddler anymore. He's a magnificent young man. There's so many things that go on that I'm grateful for. And yet it is found in the little things. It's found in the little things of life.
Do you believe that things happen for a reason?
I do. And it's a dichotomy kind of, because they happen for a reason. And yet there's choice within all of it. That was this profound message. It's just like, yeah, you have a life contract. You have, the things that are going to happen based on what your soul came into this realm to experience and get. But in every moment of it, you have a choice as well. So it's the duality in many ways.
Mm. That's interesting. Yeah. Do you think, the souls, maybe let's ask the obvious question. Is there life before and after this life on Earth? Is there a whole different realm? And I'm assuming there is, based on your story.
Well, based on my experience. Yeah. Based on my experience. And here's an interesting thing. I'll share this in brief. As life moved on, when Tanya, my current wife, came into the scene, and I even felt guilty about that, because here I was having feelings for this woman, right? And yet I was in many ways still grieving the death of my first wife. And I found myself on the grave of my first wife. And I was angry. Like, you left me, you left me, and you're in that beautiful place. And I'm here limping about, attempting to raise our son. And how dare you? It was one of those conversations. And yet in that moment, as I poured out my soul, I swear she came to me. And she communicated. She said, "Don't believe me. I loved you enough to go." And based on your question, Pete, she said, "Don't you remember? We had a contract. We had an agreement. You came and I loved you enough to go, that you would experience these things and expand your soul. I would have loved nothing more than to stay and grow old with you, but we had a different path. We had a different journey, and I agreed to it, and you agreed to it." And so there was the inkling, wow, this is all, we were together before we came here. We made these agreements, all of us. Even my little son, he said, "I'll believe and break your heart, Dad, in ways you can't imagine, that it will expand," And of course, I was there to pick a fight. And I said, "Well, I'm having feelings for another woman." And she said, "Of course you are." she laughed. She said, "Of course you are." And there was no jealousy. She encouraged me. She said, "Please choose joy." In fact, she said, I've sent Tanya in your path. It's all being orchestrated, and yet you have a choice within it, but please be open to the possibilities, because that's what makes life worth living, is to choose joy, to see the opportunities, to seize those. And my experiences, we're eternal, all of us, without beginning, without end. We have always existed. We're doing this now in this realm, and there's no accidents. Everything happens for a reason. The people we meet, you and I might be having this conversation for some profound, divine order that we don't necessarily understand. And yet within it, we are free agents. We get to choose.
And it's a beautiful way of reflecting on it, isn't it? Really, it's like, you know, life's happening for you, not to you. You know, this is not a, you know, we'll teach you a lesson type thing. It's like, no, there's a lesson, and it's delivered with love. And
yeah. And that was the interesting thing. And here's some of the things I've grappled with. When I was in the arms of God, if you will, and I'm aware of what's happened, like I'm going to live a life, you know, as an amputee, and it's going to be different. Half the family's gone, and all the things I thought were good, true, and forever are suddenly vanished, you know. And the message was so clear to me that I had created that was my creation. And that the universe, God, whatever word you want to use, were supporting my creation. Suddenly there was total accountability. It's like, you didn't do this to me. No, you created it for yourself. And we loved you enough to support it all in love as you had your experience. And being eternal, well, I'll experience this, and then who knows what's next, you know? But somehow I will experience everything my soul chooses to experience. And it was never done to me. It was done for me. And I was instrumental in the creation of it. That was the epiphany in this whole scenario. And also the fact that no one really dies. I mean, gosh, there I was holding my son. Everything was alive and well. It was simply the experience and the journey of a soul. Being my soul in this case.
It's so beautiful. I mean, is it possible to even explain or reflect on the perspective shift before and after?
It is. This changed me. I mean, before I was a red personality, go fight, win. I'd been a Division I footballer. You know, I was aggressive, beat the other guy, you know, get the job, get the house, get the car, get the girl, you know, and it was always, it was a competition. Life was a competition. I mean, even at a spiritual level, well, I'm going to live my life so that God approves of me. And, you know, and I get my prize in heaven or whatever, you know, that notion is. And then suddenly when the experience happened, not only at a very logical level, wow, half the family's gone. I used to pride myself in being so physical, and now I'm crippled, you know. But then also at a spiritual level, wow, that isn't what this was all about. This was about love, connection, oneness. This is about what my contribution is for the benefit of the greater good, instead of me winning or me being the first one there or whatever. And it did change me. People, you know, I'm much softer than I used to be. And sometimes I think, well, I've become a big sissy. You know, I used to be so tough, and now it's like, no, now I'm just all Mr. Love and acceptance and kindness. But it sits well with my soul. I find peace in that.
It's interesting, you know, when you talk about, sitting with your soul. I mean, those soul values, when you talk there, you know, about truth and clarity and oneness and love. And I mean, would they be the values, the purpose of the soul, do you think? The actual, its reason for being?
Well, for my soul, and here's the other interesting thing, there is so much uniqueness. You know, I mean, I think we're all looking for the truth. You know, what is the truth? What is the purpose of the soul? Mm-hmm. And in the end, that's my truth. That's the purpose for my soul. But your soul may have a complete different path. And that's okay. I mean, even these things that we judge as wrong, you know, things go on and people might come into our lives, or we might do things that we say, wow, that was wrong. Well, that's my judgment of it. You know, it might be the perfect, maybe the people that have hurt me the worst in my life are the greatest teachers in my life. Their purpose may have been to cross, you know, into that energy that my soul might expand. And in the end, that's love. In the end, that is love. So it's all love to me. It's all light. And it's only my judgment of it that makes it good or bad or right or wrong, dark or light. It all comes from love.
I think Neil Donald Walsh in the Conversations with God book, I mean, he talked about us having, like, I think at the time, and he was pressing the conversation with God and saying, have I been here before? Answer the question, you know? And it's like, you've only been here 647 times before. Yeah. How does that resonate with you?
I mean, it resonates. No part of my near-death experience showed me a past life, but I was very in touch with the fact that I was an eternal being. That I'd always been. And once again, I say it was a personal experience, but it seemed to resonate. This is the case of all of us. And it resonates well with me, Pete. I mean, it's like, yeah, if there's nothing but love, and there's unconditional love, in other words, no conditions on it, and my soul thirsts for expansion and remembering and divinity, then why wouldn't I do this many, many times? On this earth, in other realms, I don't know. Those things we could sit and pontificate over, but the eternal nature of our souls was very real to me. And even more poignant is I was experiencing this now for a very key cause in the expansion of my soul, or the remembering of my soul, or the learning of my soul. I mean, we're simply here to learn. And that's what it felt like. It's like, wow, life is no longer a test. It's an absolute gift. Every moment is a sacred gift, if I can embrace it that way and be in that energy. So, I have no doubt. And I love Conversations with God. That's one of the books I read that I thought, wow, this resonates. This feels very much like what I experienced. And, there's a lot of things like that I say, okay, here's a little piece of the puzzle. Here's a little piece of the puzzle. And yet my puzzle, it's a piece of my puzzle. It doesn't have to be anybody else's.
It's that thing, isn't it? You know, I kind of, through reading that book and listening to your conversation, and, you know, it works both ways. Someone had sort of explained, you know, that you can never experience outside of yourself. And if it is, or if you do, it's called a near-death experience or an out-of-body experience, right? So when we experience outside of ourselves, one, it's vital to know that everything we experience is within us. And two, that if it is happening outside, then it's going to be a divine or extreme experience. But it's that perception that actually almost, that, you know, we are everything and we are nothing. You know, it's just, I don't know, it's breathtaking in so many ways.
It's breathtaking. It is. And it's something that I'll never figure out. You know, I used to think, well, I'll figure this out. But then I've realized, you know, the more I began to know, the more I realized I knew nothing. And at this point in my life, this could change tomorrow, you know, but at this point it's like, oh, I'm completely comfortable not knowing anything. Maybe that is becoming like a child and simply being trusting and loving and in the awe of life, where a stick and a bug can occupy my entertainment, you know, for hours. And maybe that's the beautiful way of being, where I don't have to know. I can simply be. I can simply be in the moment. And, it's funny that the sayings of Jesus compare, take no heed for the morrow, you know, to simply be perfect. Consider the lilies of the field, how they grow. You know, I mean, suddenly these things that I grew up with in the Bible have far expanded meanings, as far as a roadmap for life, right?
It's so profound there, you know, and someone said to me recently there, you know, it's like Socrates didn't have Facebook, neither did Einstein, you know. it's and like Columbus didn't have GPS. It's like we consider ourselves so developed and so, you know, so evolved and all the rest. And yet, you know, the Bible, you know, texts gone by, sort of amazing pieces of philosophy and works and all that. I mean, that we still refer to this day, and yet we consider ourselves the most advanced we've ever been. But I can't help but think it's possibly we're not.
Well, you know, we call ourselves what, the information age?
Mm.
And there's so much information. I mean, I can Google anything, and I mean, there's so much information, but I think we're still starved for wisdom. And maybe in those early writings, those awakened, enlightened philosophies, if you will, perhaps there's wisdom there that goes beyond information. It's wisdom.
Is that the difference between intelligence and wisdom for you?
I don't know. I mean, I think wisdom is intelligence applied. You know, I think that's wisdom, is when, okay, I have the knowing, but have I done anything about it? You know, and that's almost back to this near-death experience. It's like, well, it happened to me. I experienced it. And many could debate, was it real? Was it a figment of my imagination? I don't know. It doesn't matter. It was very real to me.
Yeah.
And it put me on a much different course. But if I do nothing about it, then it's just intelligence. It's not wisdom, because it hasn't been applied yet.
I mean, obviously you're explaining this in words. I mean, words themselves are hugely limiting, and you know, they're perfectly imperfect. Is there a way, or is there a method that you could liken it? I mean, is it like an intuitive nudge? Is it just is it an inner knowing or something that we all just are driven by a source that we maybe don't know the origin of? How is there any way that you can liken it for people?
Oh, wow. Pete, you're so good. I don't know. I mean, inner knowing is a term I love. Mm-hmm. In fact, that's why I titled the book Knowing. This was my inner knowing. It doesn't have an agenda. I don't need to prove anything to anyone else. But for me, it's in being still and listening. You know, I mean, I grew up praying, and I would pray, and I learned to say eloquent prayers. And you know, after the experience, now I just shut up. I close my mouth and I am quiet, and I listen, and not necessarily with my ears, but with my heart. Like, what's the message today? What's the message today? And people have asked me, well, how do I get that spiritual message? Here's a little key that you could try, and all the listeners could try. When it became outward focused, in other words, if I sit still, if I get in a quiet place and I sit still, and I simply have the thought, or I might even ask and whisper it out and say, what can I do for someone else today? Almost immediately, there'll be a thought or an idea, or someone's face will come into my consciousness. And when I act upon those things, I think that's how subtle it is. I think that's the subtlety of it. It's just like, well, there's an idea. Gosh, that might have been my own imagination. But if I act upon it, let's see what happens. And let's see what difference that makes for somebody, someone. And yet for me, there's so much joy in that, because it's not about me. You know, it's about someone else. And to me, that's where the magic is found.
How's your ego?
Ego's a loaded word. And my ego, we all have an ego. I have an ego. Mm. And I used to make the ego the enemy. You know, that was, and I call it this strange battle between my head and my heart, you know, my intelligence, my consciousness says, well, you can't say that. Are you nuts? Don't go out and tell people that story. They're going to think you're crazy, you know, or they're going to think you think you're special, or, you know, there's all that chatter that goes on in the ego for me. And yet if I go into my heart, my wisdom, you know, it's almost intelligence versus wisdom. It's like, okay, but, you know, perhaps others will heal if you share your experience, or, you know, there's this inner knowing. I love that word you use, this inner knowing that speaks quieter, but often more powerful than the ego. I still read the Bible. I still embrace my Christian values. You know, I read the Bible, and now I put ego where it might say devil, you know, And the devil came tempting him, you know, and it's like, well, the ego came tempting him, you know, get behind me, ego. I know who I am. I've experienced a connection with the divine and I've experienced that unconditional love. So step down, ego, and let me be what I came here to be without all the chatter. That might be a very strange analogy, but that's how I view it at this point.
I was curious about that because, I mean, one, it's just, I always find it a fascinating topic, the ego anyway, but, you know, having this divine experience, being bathed in light and love and all that, you know, it's like it my logical brain says to me, there's no place for the ego there. Once that has happened, that actually the ego can't live in that environment. It's too sterile environment for the ego, maybe.
Yeah, well, and that's true. However, the ego has not gone away completely for me. You know, I work with some indigenous people and indigenous spirituality here in the United States. And I've found such wisdom in North, Central, and South America. There's a story, and you probably have heard this. It's probably a worldwide story, but it's a story of a chief, a very wise chief. And his grandson comes to him. The chief is aged and he's probably going to die soon. So he says to his grandson, he says, I have to tell you something. And the grandson says, yes, what is it? And he said, within me are two wolves. There's two wolves within me and they're constantly fighting. They're constantly at war. And I want you to know that one is the wolf of anger. One is the wolf of fear. One is the wolf of the ego. And the other is the wolf of love, the wolf of acceptance, the wolf of peace. But they're always fighting within me. The grandson said to the chief, well, chief, which wolf will win? And the chief replied and said, the one that I feed. and I think that's there's wisdom, you know. We all have an ego, but we also all have that divine knowing. And the one that I feed is the one that will win and be stronger. And so as I work through this now, I don't choose to stomp out the ego or kill the ego. It might be the very weight that strengthens my soul. You know, when weightlifters lift weights, they put resistance on the muscles to break up the fibers and make them stronger. And maybe in this duality of life, the ego is that resistance that causes us to actually dig deeper into our inner knowing, into that place of love, and operate from that perspective, which makes our soul stronger or expands it. I've embraced it that way at this point in my life, where it's like, I don't have to hate the ego. It's a beautiful thing. It keeps me alive, but I'm going to let my heart lead out. I'm going to lead with my heart. I'm going to lead with that wisdom. And keep things in check that way.
I mean, it's even as you were saying there with, you know, asking, you know, how can you be of service for somebody else today? And I think even part of awareness is going, is this me or is this my ego at play? Again, a very simple question for people to ask themselves, you know, and saying it almost can't hide at that point and it has to reveal itself if it is. And as soon as you ask that question, you become aware and it's in yourself, right?
Yeah, that's beautiful insight. Yeah, I hadn't thought of it that way, but I love that. I'm gonna adopt that. If you're okay with that, Pete.
Yeah, I mean, I love that because it's funny. It's not funny. I mean, it's you know, non-surprising we're having this conversation because this reflection that's been going through my head probably in the last week to 10 days. It's all you versus you, like the inner you versus the outer you, the heart you versus the, you know, the head you. You know, it's all that. And it's like, we don't need to compare or feel anything for anything outside of ourselves. It's just, you know, how we feel and how we win, which part of us we feed, right, is the one that's going to win. And they have to coexist, but which leads is our choice, right?
Right, right. I do love that. And I think humanity is going through this. I mean, many of the divisions we're seeing, particularly here in the United States, and gosh, certainly in Ireland, you guys have been through, you're on the other end of it. You can teach us all about division and overcoming that and stepping into oneness. But I think it's almost like everything we knew is coming apart, that something far grander can bloom and blossom out of the struggle, out of the strife, out of that duality. And it comes down to a choice. What will we choose? And yet I think even when one individual chooses love, it ripples out in such a powerful way that it affects all of humanity. It really does. It's an interesting time to be alive and to be here, you know, doing and being and watching all that goes on.
I mean, your book there, I mean, knowing, you know, and it's knowing memoirs of a journey beyond the veil and choosing joy after tragic loss. What have you learned from that? And what's, you know, from the book and the journey that you went through there? And what do you think people will be able to resonate with?
Well, personally, I think what I got was empathy, compassion. I mean, I think the bottom line is I've become a far more compassionate person. That's my personal gift, is I got compassion. What others might get, I don't know. You know, I mean, they may get insights. It might just be a nice story. They might find answers to their own questions. I get so many. I never had any intention, Pete, of writing a book. I was a private person. I didn't speak about this publicly for almost a decade after it happened. I mean, I was processing it. I was self-conscious about it. It wasn't until Spirit spoke. And it's funny, I was approached by a publisher to write the book. And I told them at first, no, you know. And by this time I was remarried to Tanya, my current wife. And she said, she's a very enlightened soul. She said, have you gone to source? Have you prayed over this? And I said, well, no, I just don't want to do it. And she said, well, maybe you ought to, you know, maybe you ought to tap into this creator you speak of and see what is there for you. So I actually went back to the scene of the accident, which was a very emotional and profound thing. I had avoided that area. And I prayed, I asked. And I did get that whisper. That it's not in my ears. I hear it in here. I can quote what I was told. I was told, share your experience and others will heal. And I thought, oh, well, and you know, enough time had gone by that I'd done a fair amount of healing. And I thought, if it's not about me, then the ego doesn't have to be there. If it's not about me, if it's simply about healing, then I can do this. And of course, you know, I went back to the publisher and said, okay, I'll write the book. And I figured my mother would buy a copy. It wouldn't matter, you know. And anyway, the book was released, and gosh, it did very well very quickly on Amazon. And suddenly I was asked to speak about it, and I was catapulted into a whole new way of being, where I was going to be private and tight-lipped and hold things very close to chest. Suddenly it was time to share. And some of the emails and letters and cards of what people get from the book, I'll share one instance. This is a long answer to your question, but I got it when the book came out early on. I got a letter from the publisher. It was in their letterhead, in their envelope. And I thought, well, that's nice. And I opened it up, and inside of it was a little 3x5 card with little teeny writing in pencil on it. And I thought, well, I turned it over, and it was jail mail. That's what they call it here. When someone is incarcerated, when they're in prison, they monitor all their mail, so everything's just on a 3x5 card. And the only address this person had was to send it to the publisher, because that was on the back of the book, and then the publisher forwarded it to me. Anyway, it was from a man in prison. And he had scratched out on the back of his 3x5 card. He just opened up his heart. He said, I'm in prison. I did horrible things. I lost my family too, not to death, but they have disowned me over the choices I've made. And then what he wrote, he said, but I read your book. And I don't know how it found its way to somebody in prison. But he said, I've decided that I am loved. I've decided that I can be different. I've decided I can change. I've decided that I will come out of here much different than I came in. And he thanked me. And I it made me cry. I was weeping, thinking, wow, that's the guy. That's the one I wrote the book for. You know, if he's found healing that way, then it was all worth it. And that's one instance. But I don't know what people will get. That's a personal journey. It goes back to that. The kingdom of God is within you. You'll get your own answers in your own way, and it has nothing to do with me. But if the book assists along that journey, great. And that's what it was for.
Beautiful. I mean, just that opportunity to share. But then, like you say, I mean, we're never clear about the ripples that we create in the pond. And you know, but that is pure love and truth and clarity, isn't it? The fact that you trust that you're doing the right thing, and somebody somewhere may benefit, right? You know, it's
yeah, right. That's just it. It was never about a book. I mean, it was about healing. It was about healing.
Mm-hmm. What I mean for you, where do you say you? I mean, where is your passion now? What's your your superpower, if you like, if you want to put it that way, or your flow state?
Well, I still work. I came up in the creative realms. I ran an advertising agency, and I'm now working for a small little content provider, BYU TV. It's a streaming service and a linear television channel, but we're creating content that that is value-based, entertaining, but the families can watch together. And there's a good message in there. And that's what I do on a daily basis. I'm also all about oneness. Mm-hmm. I still write, I still am about healing. And, I do some personal coaching. I do something called the Spirit Keeper series, which I'm passionate about. This is indigenous spirituality. I talked about the wolf story and some of the stories that go on in indigenous cultures. And gosh, the Celtic culture, you guys have deep roots there as well, but it's a reframing of faith, perhaps. And it's looking at these age-old ancient traditions and practices that bring spirituality to one and bring a connection to source, whatever that is for you. So I'm passionate about that, and I'm doing that series right now. And it mixes in the Munaki, which is very Mayan and Incan, and it mixes in some Lakota traditions. It's very much about the Americas and the native spirituality here that I think they really understood things at a deep level. The Europeans came in and didn't understand it because it didn't look like their ways, right? But I'm finding some very deep, powerful truths and traditions that I'm teaching as well. So I have a lot of different passions. And I suppose that's purposes as well.
You mentioned the start there. I mean, this healing. Do you find you have healing capacities or healing knowingness? Or where do you sit?
That's a good question. And I've done training in many healing modalities. Sometimes it always goes right back to Jesus for me. But when the physician came and Jesus said, "Physician, heal thyself," for me, that's the healing modality, is that every person has the capacity to heal. And yet, what is healing? Is healing curing those things in the body? Or is healing a spiritual thing that perhaps takes us to the other side? I mean, maybe the healing is in the passing. So I put no expectations on it, but I hold a context for people to get their own answers and to in turn heal themselves. And yet by healing themselves, they do heal others. Again, that energy ripples out in such a way. But I don't claim that I can go about healing, people of cancer or their infirmities, but I do claim to go about and love them and walk with them as they deal with whatever their journey is. Which is perfect, even if it looks completely different than mine or someone else's,
When in general, what is there anything in particular, you think that maybe we as a society are getting or not getting, based upon I suppose your experiences and your awareness. I mean, are we missing the point of a lot of things, or?
I think we do. I think the big truth is that we're one. We're literally brothers and sisters. And if we could lean into that instead of all the division and all the right, wrong games that we play and all the judging of, well, they're wrong and we're right. And if we could let go of that and just lock arms and say, hey, we have different beliefs, you know, we have different creeds, we have different colors and cultures. But if we could lock arms and say, let's be one, let's heal this planet, let's heal each other, even if we're completely different, that's where we may be missing. And yet that may be the perfect order of what we're coming into. I don't know that anything's out of order. I think there is divine order in all of it, if I'm willing to see it, open my eyes and see it.
It's a phenomenal awareness, I suppose. And that's what almost sort of takes my breath away about, you know, how, you know, we can help people to see or to sort of show that awareness, or, you know, because I'm also blown away. I mean, that the likes of that whole experience that you found, I mean, do you have any concept of how long you were in that experience? Because
yeah, there's no concept of time. I mean, at the scene of the accident, for instance, when I said goodbye to my wife, here I was in this bubble of light saying this profound goodbye. I later found out people arrived at the scene of the accident. You know, Spencer was seen too, my son that survived. And luckily, a doctor actually pulled over. He was able to deal with that and also deal in a professional way with my other family members who had passed. I had to be extricated from the car. They had to extricate me from the car. I was then airlifted or life flighted to the nearest level one trauma center. I wasn't aware of any of that. I just knew I'd crashed the car and said the most profound goodbye I'd ever say. And then I found myself wondering about that trauma center. But I don't know the concept of time. I almost got the sense, however, on the other side that there was no time, that it didn't really matter, that time was a constraint and a concept we deal with here, but there was no time. That's a great question.
Mm-hmm. So tell me, I mean, for you now, I mean, you know, are there more books? Do you think? Do you have a sort of goals or clarity and where you're going? And
Yeah, I'm working very hard right now with my job, but I do have I think there's a series of three books, Knowing, which is out. I'm working on the outline of a second, which is called Being. Being, what does it mean to be, to simply be? Uh-huh. And then I'd love to do a third called Seeing. You know, how do we see, how do we have the vision, not with our eyes, but with our consciousness, you know, to see things with clarity. And that it could be a trilogy when I'm older and even more gray and done, but that's, yeah, there could be more books. There could be more books.
And interesting, you were saying, you know, the books were just not on your agenda previously at all.
No, I never fancied myself a writer either. You know, my in the agency and in my work, I'm a creative director, but I'm visual. I'm the art guy. I'm the pictures, not the words. And so, if there's anything any good in the book, I can't take credit for it. It was probably part of that was channeled as I wrote, or part of that spiritually came through. And yet I do get so many positive comments about the book.
Mm. Why is that, do you think, that people sort of resonate? Because I mean, I was looking at, you know, the number of comments on YouTube videos and, you know, in the book and everything else. And it really does seem to resonate with people, doesn't it? It just...
Yeah, I you know... Pete, I don't know. However, I think there's an energy to this, and that is, I was just honest. I wasn't trying to write a great book. I was just putting my soul on the pages. Mm-hmm. And I think there's an authenticity to our humanness when we do that. When we're just open and honest with each other, there seems to be a connected energy that works.
Yeah, that's just, it is an opportunity just to be, right? You know, it's
right.
There's a story or a parable that story, and they talk about, you know, it's two babies in the womb are talking, you know, and they talk about, you know, one sort of saying, I like it here and I don't want to change. And the other one saying, well, maybe there's more. It's fantastic until they go through this whole conversation, you know, it's like, no, I don't want change. I want to stay here. This is perfect. And it's like, but what if, you know? And
yeah,
you know, it's that aspect of going, you know, if you knew where we were going, you wouldn't be sad for the person leaving, you know, you'd be full of love and joy for them, you know, that they get to experience this or they get to move on, you know?
Yeah. And I have no fear of death at this point. I mean, death was beautiful. The dying part was kind of hard, but the death, and it's interesting too, and that there's contrast, and this is all in the book as well, but Spencer, my son, 7 years old, and he lost his mother and he lost his brother and in many ways lost his father. I was never going to be the same. And he never had an out-of-body or near-death experience. He didn't even have a mystical or spiritual experience. He, half the family was gone. His life was completely uprooted. I'll tell you an interesting story about him. And this is key. This was key for me, too. I worried about him so much. You know, I mean, how was he going to deal with this? And how was I going to raise him alone and from a wheelchair? And I'll never forget the day they brought me home. And I couldn't go home to my home from the hospital. I still had home health care and home doctors coming in. My younger brother had cleared out a room and put a hospital bed in it. And my son had been staying with him. You know, they just took him in like he was one of their own. But the day I came home from the hospital was a profound lesson for me, because my brothers came to get me once again. And at this point, they had to literally lift me into the wheelchair. I couldn't get into it. They had to pick me up and put me in it. And my left leg was cut off above the knee. My right leg was in a sling, in a brace sticking straight out. And then my right arm was in a sling. All I could do was drive this electric wheelchair with my one left hand that worked. And so my brothers would lift me in the wheelchair and I would drive this little electric wheelchair, and they had put a ramp, you know, so I could get in the house, and they came to the hospital and got me and picked me up, and we drove to the home. And I had seen Spencer. He'd come to visit me in the hospital. But this was on his turf. Here was my 7-year-old. This was his turf. And I was showing up with the big colostomy bag and the amputation and all that went on. And as we pulled up to the house, I could see him looking out the window, you know, and he was watching my brothers, his uncles, you know, lift me, his dad, into the wheelchair. And I thought, how's he going to accept this? I was the rough and tumble father, and now I'm crippled in every way. And anyway, as they put me in the chair and I began to go to the house, he ran out the door and he ran toward me, but he ran right past me. And I thought, well, I knew this was too much. I knew he would have a hard time accepting this now, like this. And I navigated my way to the ramp and I began to turn. As I turned, I just looked to see where he'd gone. And he'd actually run across the street and he was knocking on all the neighbors' doors. And he began to shout, come out, come out. My dad is home. My dad has made it home. Come see my dad. And I just burst into tears, you know. And I thought, my judgments of myself are not his. And he ran around and he then did throw himself on my lap, which just about killed me because I still had all the sutures and everything from the abdominal repair. And this is why I share this. He threw his arms around me and I explained, look, I'm going to be like this for a while. I'm going to work really hard to get well, but are you going to be okay with this? I mean, this is me. And we laugh now. He's a grown man. He's 30 years old. But he said, Dad, if you were nothing but a puddle of blood, I would still love you. And I just burst into tears. Here's why I share this, Pete. Here I was, you know, in a wheelchair holding my surviving son in this room. And suddenly it was no less divine than being in that other realm holding my son who had passed. I mean, suddenly heaven was right here. There was nowhere to go. There was nothing to become. It was simply to be in that perfect moment and experience the unconditional love of a child which was as unconditional as the love I felt from the divine creator. And I thought, wow, maybe it's right here. You know, maybe there's nothing to wish for. Maybe there's nothing to get to. Maybe there's nothing to become. Maybe there's just to relish this beautiful, perfect moment in the now, in this realm of the love of a child or a family member or a spouse or a brother or whatever that is, and realize that we are divine and that divinity is right here if we choose to accept it that way.
Do you see energy or potential or see things in other people or feel things in other people?
I feel it. I don't see it all the time. I have seen, I've had dreams and visions. Read about it in knowing. I mean, Tamara has never, my first wife, I mean, my current wife has had interactions, mystical interactions with my first wife. It's crazy, but I don't necessarily see energies, but I feel a lot. I do feel a lot, and I trust what I feel.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Tell us, what does Jeff do for guilty pleasures or normal pleasures?
What's your thing? Oh, well, I love getting out in nature, and I don't feel guilty about that. I love being in the mountains, by the river, by the trees, watching the sky. I love good food. I probably eat too much, but and it's I'm not necessarily what they call here a foodie. It might be an exquisite meal somewhere, but it might be a hot dog, off the street, vending stand. I do love food. And I don't know, I love a lot of things. But those are the two things that I do most, is get out into nature and then have a really nice meal, whatever that happens to be at the time. And those are my guilty pleasures, I suppose.
Is that the place? I mean, you get to sort of connect to yourself as such,
Oh yeah. In nature, when I'm eating food, that's just self-indulgence, but it's good and I enjoy it. But yeah, when I get out into nature, and there's a divine feminine energy there, Mother Earth, as the indigenous call it. I mean, sometimes when I'm having a bad day, I'll go outside and I'll literally lay on the ground, lay on the earth, just lay in the grass or the dirt and let Mother hold me, just let that, I swear I can feel all the stress just being drawn out and she knows what to do with it. She knows what to do with it. And so that really is where I connect, is in nature.
Do you have any concept? I mean, there's different lines of thought. People sort of say that, almost the conscious mind is about 5% and the subconscious mind is doing 95% of the work. I mean, you have any thoughts or takes on that?
Oh, I wish I was a scientist, Pete, and I would love to break down the science of all that. I have some friends at the University of Virginia in the Division of Perceptual Studies that study those type of things. And I love the science behind it. I think our consciousness, and particularly our subconsciousness, is very powerful. Mm-hmm. Our thoughts are so powerful, and our thoughts become real. I've begun to do an exercise, and this is, again, maybe that ego and that heart thing, but the words I am, and my ego would say, well, I am eating too much. I am fat. I am, I am crippled. I am these things. But if I can shift that and let the subconscious say, I am divine, I am an eternal being having my experience. I am love. I am kindness. I am peace. I mean, the energy of those words in the subconscious mind, and I check that now when I'm hearing in the subconscious, when I tune into that, and if it's negative thoughts or negative talk, if I shift it to positive. And I also ask myself, am I operating out of fear or am I operating out of love? If I have some notion or some thought, I'll say, well, wait a minute, where's that coming from? Is that fear or is it love? And those are the things I do that maybe can train that subconscious mind so that the wolf of love is being fed. That's some of my practices, which seem very elementary, and yet I'm a simple man. It is elementary to me, so.
I mean, are you able to sort of self-reflect in that way? I mean, does it, you know, some people to see ourselves, it's, you know, some would argue is the hardest thing, you know, but we need to reflect off somebody to be able to gauge that. Or are you able to sort of be attuned to your own knowing, knowledge, who you are, what's right, what's wrong?
Some days, yeah, some days I am and some days I'm not. You know, I go through the regular emotions of life. And the ways of being, but that contract, you know, that I developed in impact trainings, you know, when I'm having a hard day, that's probably when I say that the most, to remind myself of who I really am, rather than the experience I'm having.
So powerful. Powerful. So tell us, Jeff, where can people reach out to you? Where can they reach out to get the book? Where can they learn more, hear more, see more?
I would love that. You can email me, and it's my full name, which is Jeffrey, J-E-F-F-E-R-Y, C, it's my middle initial, Olsen, O-L-S-E-N, at gmail.com. My full name, no dots or dashes, middle initial, Jeffrey C. Olsen, at gmail. Knowing is most easily found on Amazon. Just go look up Knowing by Jeffrey Olsen on Amazon, and you'll see it there. I'm on all the social platforms, you know, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and that is Jeffrey C. Olsen. Just look at that. But gosh, email me, reach out. I'm happy to walk with you on the journey, whatever that might look like.
Any thoughts on when we might see Being and Seeing?
Wow. Well, I would say in the next, maybe 14 months. We might look at Being. I've got the outline there, and I'm writing a little between work days and long work days at this point. But I would love to have that out in the next 14 months or so.
Wonderful.
I'll tell you another interesting thing, and this will be coming out this spring. This is one of my passions that I failed to mention. My son Spencer, who survived the accident, he and I have just done a children's book. And it's written from his perspective as a seven-year-old, having half the family gone. Now, he's written that now as a grown man, but the book is titled, Where Are You? And it talks about his journey without a near-death or mystical or spiritual experience of, gosh, where are you? And yet it's a beautiful journey of the pain, the grief, and yet finding the joy and the connection in a unique way. I'm probably slow and thick and didn't, you know, I probably needed all these near-death experiences to get me through, or I may have been the guy strung out on the corner, you know, wondering what happened. My son had none of that, and yet he's become one of the most compassionate, beautiful people. He told me once in his early adulthood, he said, Dad, I got none of that. You know, I mean, I was seven and mom died and Griffin died and you were crippled and I didn't have a near-death experience. I didn't have a visitation. And he said, either you're making it up or you're deceived in some crazy way. Or if there's this greater power you call God, it doesn't care about me. I was a little boy and I beat my knuckles bloody on that door you call God and it never opened, you know, and, It was interesting for me. But he, again, our paths are so perfect. His journey with none of that. He thought, well, maybe I'll be God's love. Maybe I'll be God's light for all those kids that don't have the experience or don't seem to connect through traditional prayer or, you know, maybe I can do that. And he's done this book now. That we collaborated on, but that'll be out in the springtime. And that would be available on Amazon probably by May, but it's called Where Are You? And it's a beautiful children's book, but it has a profound message that I think resonates with all ages.
Oh, so that is powerful. It's an amazing tool to serve and to help others out there. You know, it's amazing, amazing place to be. So tell us, is there a final message you'd like to leave with our listeners?
Oh, wow. Thank you. Thank you. And gosh, choose joy. It's a choice. Choose joy, no matter the circumstances. And we're going to have the gamut of emotion. I mean, that's what we came here for. You know, it's not all going to be joyful. There'll be painful grief and all kinds of things go on, but consciously choose joy and ask, what am I learning? Not why me, but what am I learning from this and how's it expanding my soul? And that's what I've found, peace.
Out of interest, I mean, if you were to define your fire in the belly in one or two words, what would they be, Jeff?
Say that again, Pete, sorry.
If you were to try and define your fire in the belly in a couple of words.
Fire in the belly, yes. Wow, it's love. Love is my motivation. Fire in the belly, if I can show up in any way, in some small way, for any one person, is that divine, unconditional love I experienced. That's my fire in the belly. That's the reason for being.
Beautiful. Jeff, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate you sharing your story. And I'm looking forward to reading the book and learning so much more. And thank you for being present and thank you for letting us know. And
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. And I love the work you're doing. And I love the questions you ask too. It's been an absolute honor to be on the show with you. And I trust we'll all have fire in the belly. That's what drives us. That fire in the belly. Do that. That's what makes a difference in the world.
Whatever it is, whatever it may be.
Whatever it may be.
Until the next time, Jeff. Thank you.
Cheers, mate. We'll see you soon.
Well, that was another great episode of Fire in the Belly. You know, this really wouldn't be possible without our great guests taking the time to share their personal journeys. And boy, oh boy, sometimes it is personal. It's an absolute pleasure to have that, and then to hear the journeys that people have been on. We've loads more episodes coming up soon, and it's always a pleasure to have guests on. If you do happen to know anyone with true fire in their belly, please reach out to us so we can share their journey, lessons and successes. So, all that's left to say is have a great day, live with fire in your belly, and be the mightiest version of you.